Welcome to Technology and the Arts, a bi-weekly podcast exploring the connections between the worlds of technology and art. In this installment, we'll hear from Rider University professors Donald Ambrose and Sigfredo Hernandez and our very own John Lemazny, an instructional technologist at Rider, on a project there combining visual metaphor and open source technologies. We'll also look at the Ubuntu Studio project, as well as music search site Midomi.com. Plus, we'll discuss the online offerings of University of Pennsylvania radio station WXPN. We'll talk about all of this and more just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Wednesday, February 7th, 2007. Now, here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazny.
Welcome to another edition of the Technology and the Arts podcast. As always, Technology and the Arts seeks to explore the connections between technology and art and to establish a forum for discussing the impact technology has made on the human creative process and on literature, music, and the visual and interactive arts.
And to let you know who we are, my name is Brian Kelly. I am a journalist by trade, amateur songwriter and musician, and science and technology enthusiast living in central New Jersey.
And my name is John Lemazny. I'm an artist, musician, poet, and technologist living in the Northeast Corridor.
Taking a look at what's on the palette for this podcast, in our In Perspective segment, we will discuss the Ubuntu Studio Project, which aims to produce an open-source creative development platform based on the popular Ubuntu Linux operating system. We'll also look at the online offerings of University of Pennsylvania radio station WXPN. And we'll talk about Midomi.com, a music search site that allows you to find songs and other users of the site with your voice. Plus, we'll look at some helpful news and resources we found online recently. Then, in our dialogue segment, we'll hear from Donald Ambrose, professor of teacher education at Rider University, and Sigfredo Hernandez, professor of marketing at Rider. Professor Ambrose is a specialist in teaching strategies and is going to tell us about one particularly interesting strategy that focuses on visual learners called visual metaphor. Professor Ambrose and our very own John Lemazny recently co-presented a faculty development session on visual metaphor. And John will tell us about the session's use of an open-source imaging application called the GNU Image Manipulation Program to extend the capabilities of the visual metaphor teaching strategy. But before we get into all that, John, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Thanks for asking. We just started our semester at Rider, and I wanted to take this opportunity to tell all the students at Rider, in case you're listening, that if you're having trouble logging into Blackboard, it is an EasyPass issue, not a Blackboard issue. I just figured I'd save myself some answers on the phone.
There's some people lined up outside the door.
Yeah, they're all asking whether or not I'm the person to talk to about their inability to log into Blackboard. It's not me. At any rate, we did talk about the faculty development sessions, and those were really a launch for the rest of the sessions that we do throughout the semester, the Center for Innovative Instruction faculty development sessions. And we have some really interesting ones this year. One of the ones that I'm really excited about is an extension, a series on the visual metaphor session that we did on Faculty Development Day. And if any faculty are listening, please make it a point to try and get to these sessions because I think it's a great way for you to extend your teaching tool set. And I also wanted to say that at Rider we just got a Google Mini. If you don't know what a Google Mini is, it's a search appliance. It sort of provides the same level of search capability that Google itself provides, but it's limited to just your servers. And we're really excited about it. I'm making it look nice and pretty right now. They send you a Google t-shirt. When you open it up, you know, you see the server and then you see this t-shirt, so they try and make you pretty too. At any rate, how have you been, Brian?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for asking. I have some musical ideas flowing through my head and hoping for the chance to get some time to work them out a little bit.
So are you using like a workstation or are you just playing around right now?
No, I'm just working on some parts on the keyboard right now, and at some point I'll build into a full orchestration. I'm not sure what I'll be using until my PowerBook, although my PowerBook showed some signs of life recently and turned on, actually. So, I don't know, maybe I can get into GarageBand a little bit, but we'll see. Hopefully that, you know, I get that new MacBook soon. I also want to thank Alan Goldsmith, again, on the Montgomery Center for the Arts.
Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, US 1, which is a weekly newspaper that's distributed along the Route 1 corridor here in central New Jersey, did a story on a workshop he held at the MCA on January 27th. And in the story, thanks to his suggestion, the writer mentioned technology and the arts. You can see the press clipping on the Technology and the Arts blog at techarts.wordpress.com. We did get a nice little spike in site traffic and podcast downloads. And I would also like to thank John for all the enhancements he has made to our Technology and the Arts website.
Yeah, I finally had a chance to sit down and really pay attention to the things that need to be said on our site. First of all, if you look down on the right-hand side, there is, in the links area, I've created 80 pixel by 15 pixel buttons, commonly known as brilliant buttons or badges. We have one for me, one for Brian, one for Podcast Alley, one for our podcast RSS feed, one for our iTunes subscription page, and one for our New Jersey Podcast Association membership. Also, one of the coolest things is that WordPress.com just recently allowed the uploading of other media besides JPEGs and GIFs and PNGs. They now allow you to upload MOVs, allow the upload of MPEG-3s, allow lots of different media types to go up, PowerPoints, etc. And so instead of us having to worry about where we're going to store different pieces of media, we can start to consider storing it all in one place. Although it is nice to store our media on archives.org, so we may have some divergence there. At any rate, another thing that they just launched is the ability to embed a media player for audio only, which is a nice start, but we're really looking forward to the other media types being able to be played with the embedded player. The embedded player, you can hit the play button right on the post, and you can listen to the podcast right away or any other media that we put up, audio media that we put up. In the future, when we start to maybe do some video work or do segments that are video-based, or do screencasts, you know, like I'd love to show you all a little screencast of the GNU Image Manipulation Program and talk about the visual metaphor session that we did. That would be great to have a screencast there, but because we don't have an embedded media player for MPEG-4 for MOVs, we can't do that right now. We can do it on other sites like lemazny.com or other sites where we have a homegrown installation where you have a lot more plugins available and a lot more sophisticated abilities. But on WordPress.com, they just haven't made a movie player, an embedded movie player available yet. But there is hope. So, and this is a step in the right direction to be able to embed our audio right on the page. This does not mean that our RSS feed for our podcast has changed. You can still go to iTunes. You can still go to FeedBurner. And using our links in our badge list there to subscribe to those, and it'll automatically download those podcasts for you. But if you just come to our site and you want to share our podcast with somebody, you can go to the site, go to the post for the podcast, and hit play, and it'll start to play right away. We're very excited about it.
Yes. Once again, John, thanks. The embedded player is really helpful. It adds a really nice touch to this website. So thank you.
I agree. I'd also like to say, if you come to the site, leave a comment. Let us know what you think about what we're doing. If we're leaving something out or if we're doing something wrong, we want to know that too. Please use the comment tools on WordPress.com to let us know that you're listening and let us know what you'd like.
All right. Our vision statement says we want to become a forum for discussing the connections between technology and art, and we're not going to be a forum if it's just us talking, so we need your help.
Please.
But now let's get to our In Perspective segment of the show. This is where we look at recent headlines or hot topics, give a little background information on them, and then discuss. John, what would you like to put in perspective for our listeners this week?
Well, I have five what I think are really interesting items, the first of which is a site, and of course all these sites you'll be able to get by visiting the show notes on techarts.wordpress.com. The first one was a nice article that gives a quick tutorial on how to emulate the style of the movie A Scanner Darkly. If you saw even the previews, you can get a good idea for the artistic graphic style I'm talking about.
That was a very cool movie, by the way.
Very cool movie. I actually did not see the movie, but I am familiar with director Richard Linklater's other work, Waking Life. And the technique we're talking about that creates the graphic look in the films is called interpolated rotoscoping. And essentially, it's the ability to have overlaid shapes on top of images that were recorded in a traditional way with a video camera of live action. Then that live action sequence is brought into an application that I believe Richard Linklater helped to develop. And shapes are imposed on top of those photos in each frame of the film. And it gives a really sort of amazing effect that it's really hard to describe verbally. Talk about visual metaphor. It's a really amazing effect, and the effect can be emulated using the tutorial on illustratortechniques.com. So I'd like you to go check that out. It's actually written by the lead animator of the film A Scanner Darkly. His name is Sterling Allen. The next thing I wanted to tell you about was a site called brusheasy.com, and that's brusheasy.com. And what it is it's a collection of free Photoshop brushes that in the latest version of the GNU Image Manipulation Program, the GIMP, it can also use these brushes. Actually, the latest version is in beta, and so if you download the latest stable version, it won't work. But in the near future, you'll be able to use brusheasy.com to download brushes to use with the GNU Image Manipulation Program. So I wanted to make you aware of that. The next site is pdfmags.com. That's pdf-mags.com. And on this site, there's a whole bunch of magazines, usually design magazines, usually lightly edited design magazines, really sort of almost rough cut, really interesting design techniques. And there are whole collections of them in PDF that are free for download. And if you are a artist or a visual designer or really any sort of creative individual, you'll really like some of the stuff that's up there. I really have fallen in love with a couple of the magazines I found there, one of which is Bastard Magazine, another which is called Embryo, and another is Individual, I-N-D-I-V-I-S-U-A-L. But there are probably 20 or 30 fantastic magazines that you can go and check out right now, and there's entire volumes of them. And I've downloaded, you know, every issue of Individual I could find, for example, and Bastard Magazine. I mean, they're really sort of almost in the style of a punk rock zine, e-zine. And I would really like everybody to at the very least, check that out. The next thing I want to talk about is a collection of public images sites on dailycost.com. And the thing that's so great about that is that if you go to the site, there's a list of, it seems like, about 20 or 30 sites. And then each of those has sometimes hundreds of resources on each of those sites. And what it is they're all public domain images. And so if you're starting out a layout project or you're starting out a design project and you need inspiration or you need some place to go to sort of get some rough sketches that you want to sort of drop into your design in anticipation of getting the photo from your photographer, this is a great resource. And some of them are fantastic, some of them are mediocre, and some of them are poor, just like any really great collection, I think. But, you know, the fun is in the journey. And so I would definitely check that out. And again, all these links are up at techarts.wordpress.com in our show notes. Finally, I'd like to talk about an announcement by the Ubuntu Linux group about a derivative of Ubuntu called Ubuntu Studio. And Ubuntu Studio is meant to be a version of their distribution where all of the best creative and design applications and layout applications and audio applications and video applications and editors and all these great tools for visual and creative and audio artists are all put out on one disk. Right now, they're in a planning stage, and the planning stage has a wiki that you can go to and you can contribute your feelings about it. You can say, one thing that I'd really like to see on this is, you know, the GNU image manipulation program, which that's a bad example. That was probably one of the first things they actually put on the disk. But they're talking about format, whether it's going to be three CDs or whether it's going to be one DVD. And they're talking about sort of the look and feel of the distribution. If you're not familiar with Linux and you're not familiar with the idea of a distribution, it's a collection of software packages that are free that are all used for some particular task. In the case of Ubuntu itself, there's no limit to the packages. There's word processing, and there's all these creative applications that we're talking about, and there's, you know, applications for services like Apache and PHP. But this is specifically meant for artists, creative artists, audio artists, three-dimensional artists, broadcasters.
Music.
Yeah. That's what I mean by audio artists. But yeah, specifically it's meant for musicians, for anybody who needs a tool to make a creative product. And so it's just in the planning stage now, but as I said, they have a quick path to finishing it. They're supposed to have it ready by April.
I was going to ask you that, what their time frame was.
They're planning on having a distribution available, at least in beta, I guess, by April of this year.
John, why is Ubuntu so popular?
Well, Ubuntu is a distribution of Linux that has gotten a lot of popularity in the last year or so, maybe 2 years. And it's based on a less popular distribution of Linux called Debian. Debian is popular amongst a core group in the Linux users audience, but they're really sort of hardcore users who are, you know, high productivity and sort of like sysadmin types. What Ubuntu does is it takes the best parts of Debian, like the updating tools and the community, or they have certain rules about what packages they'll bring in, such as, you know, there can be no proprietary part of it if it's to be included in Debian. So Ubuntu took those sort of core values of Debian and added onto it a beautiful look and feel, a great community, great support, and a plan. And not that Debian doesn't have a plan, but Ubuntu really sort of pays attention to what the community wants and acts on it very quickly. One of the main complaints about Debian, for example, is that it doesn't have the most up-to-date packages all the time. And the reason for that is because Debian tries to be as stable as possible. So they don't need to have the latest and greatest. They need to have something that's tried and true. Ubuntu wants to have the latest and greatest in addition to having a good testing community core and to make sure that it's a strong distribution and stable, in addition to having, you know, for example, Firefox version 2. If I didn't have Firefox version 2 on my Linux distribution, I'd be pretty upset. And Debian users have to wait for things like that. Ubuntu users do not.
How many creative artists are using Ubuntu at this point?
As far as a number, I don't even know how many users altogether are using Ubuntu. They'd probably have that statistic on their site. But I mean, where's the threshold for, you know, who's a creative individual versus not? But I would say that when Ubuntu Studio comes out, I think that it'll be a great inroad for creative people to get into open source software in a really big way very quickly. One of the things that's great about Ubuntu too is that it has what's called a live CD distribution. And what that means is you can essentially download the ISO, burn it to a CD, drop it into your CD-ROM drive, reboot your computer, and it looks as though you've installed the operating system. It runs as though you've installed it. But in reality, it has not been installed. It's just running off the CD. So it's a little bit slow, but you get all the functionality. And so with that, it means that you don't have to uninstall, you know, macOS. There's actually a PPC version for it and an Intel version. But on the PC, you don't have to uninstall Windows to try Ubuntu. You can just drop in the live CD. And in the case of Ubuntu Studio, they plan on doing exactly the same thing, offering you all these great tools for free, for absolutely for free, that you can boot off your CD and use, and you can save to a USB drive.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. So what would you like to talk about in perspective this week?
A couple of things. The first I want to mention is a site that I came across recently is midomi.com, and there's a link to that in the show notes. It's in beta right now, but It allows you to search for songs by singing or humming into a microphone attached to your computer and having the website record your performance. And then it compares your vocal performance with others contributed from other users in its library and finds matches.
Well, it's really interesting because there's actually a similar thing in the imaging world where there are certain image search interfaces that allow you to use like a limited sort of toolkit and like grab a paintbrush and draw sort of a shape, and it'll look through all of its images in its database to find the image that most matches your little sketch. It's a really sort of neat parallel idea.
Right. Well, in this case, it'll match it to an original song if it's in the Midomi library, and it'll produce that song and other recordings by other users of the site. So it kind of almost works as a social networking site for karaoke singers. I mean, that's how I look at it. I'm hesitant to try it out myself, but it looks kind of fun for someone like me who's always, you know, singing in this car. And the other thing I want to talk about is my favorite radio station, 88.5 WXPN-FM, which can be found online at xpn.org. XPN is the non-commercial, member-supported radio service of the University of Pennsylvania. It's a great community partner, and within the past year, even picked up the alternative music torch in Philadelphia by adding Y-Rock on XPN. Around this time, 2 years ago, the last alternative FM radio outlet in Philly, Y100, changed formats. Some former Y100 staffers started a website called y100rocks.com, which provided a streaming radio station echoing Y100's programming. Well, XPN brought alternative music back to the airwaves in late August 2006 by offering Y-Rock on XPN, hosted by former Y100 program director Jim McGuinn, each weeknight on XPN. In addition, Y-Rock on XPN is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week as an internet stream. You can hear a little bit of everything on XPN, which is why I like it. I mean, in addition to the Y-Rock stuff on the weeknights, you have folk, blues, rock. One Friday night, I got in my car, and they were playing Supper's Ready by Genesis, which is like 27 minutes long. I mean, what radio station is going to play that?
It really is a really interesting station to listen to.
Yeah, and I have a very eclectic taste in music, and a lot of the artists I listen to are not going to get played on your typical mainstream FM station. But I do hear a lot of them on XPN, and in many cases, XPN has led me to discover many of these artists. But XPN is innovative not just in its music programming savvy, but also in its use of technology in helping to connect the station with its audience, and its audience to new music. Of course, there is the usual online fare offered by most radio stations. You know, it has concert and event listings, live streams of the station. XPN also has a playlist, but it's kind of nice how they do it. You can look at a calendar and say last Tuesday morning, you know, during your morning commute, you heard a song and you didn't know what it was, but you liked it. You can just go back on the calendar, pick that day, and, you know, you can look at the time slots and you can kind of figure out what song it was. It listed by time. And XPN.org also features a very active message board community. But that's not all. The XPN blog offers a ton of content. There are podcasts and information about shows on the station, but the coolest thing is a feature called My Morning Download. Basically, each weekday, XPN staff will showcase an emerging artist or band, or perhaps an act that has been under the radar for a few years, and post information about the artist along with a free MP3 download. It's a really cool way to find new artists and collect new music along the way. With so many internet offerings, XPN launched a web initiative in August 2006 called Exponential Music On Demand, which can be found at exponentialmusic.org. Exponential Music On Demand basically serves as a clearinghouse for all of XPN's available radio streams, podcasts, as well as streams of archived live concerts. I love XPN, and I love telling people about XPN, so that's why I wanted to use this forum to do that. Even if you're not in the Philly area, if you are a fan of eclectic and interesting music, you owe it to yourself to log on to XPN.org and check it out. The best part of all this is that XPN serves up music worth discovering and listening to, and there are no commercials. This is just great music, and XPN providing great ways of connecting people to it. As the station likes to say, it's all about the music.
I've been a fan of XPN for a long time, and although most of the time I spend in the car spent listening to NPR rather than XPN. It's really the same idea. I don't like listening to commercials. I don't like listening to the paid for view. If I want to listen to music, XPN is really the only thing I'll listen to. I mean, as far as radio play.
So now it's time for our dialogue segment, featuring conversations with those who work with art and technology on an everyday basis. Donald Ambrose is a professor of teacher education at Rider University, who is spearheading a project there that brings together the visual metaphor instructional strategy and open source software applications such as the GNU Image Manipulation Program. Sigfredo Hernandez, professor of marketing at Rider, has integrated visual metaphor into his teaching with the help of the Center for Innovative Instruction at Rider University. John was able to talk with Professors Ambrose and Hernandez and asked them to explain exactly how the visual metaphor teaching strategy, also called images of wide scope, can help students learn rich, broad topics in a deeper way. Let's take a listen to the report John filed on visual metaphor.
Visual metaphor is a teaching strategy where verbal concepts are translated into visual constructs for the purposes of making them understandable from a different learning perspective. Dr. Donald Ambrose and I recently co-presented a two-part session on visual metaphor, where he gave an overview of how to apply visual metaphor using pencil and paper, and I gave a session on how to apply it using the open-source image editing application known as the GNU Image Manipulation Program. Don sat down to explain the nature of the visual metaphor teaching strategy, also known as images of wide scope.
Metaphor tends to be thought of as a literary construct, in that students are grappling with concepts in verbal linguistic form. But when you stop and think about it, what is a metaphor? It's a translation from visual to verbal thought. You're turning a concept that's visual into a verbal form. And a visual metaphor goes back in the other direction.
Don also gave some insights into the discovery of this method as a teaching technique and its potential as a teaching strategy. One might say it evolved into something very useful from something quite elementary. Don explains.
The image of wide scope concept comes from Howard Gruber, a developmental psychologist from Columbia University, who studied the way very intelligent people tend to think. And he made his name through the study of Charles Darwin. And what he discovered was that Darwin was writing large volumes of material about his theorizing in notebooks. And every once in a while, Gruber would come across a notation in the margins that was in the form of a little verbal or a little visual representation, a graphic, a stick man figure with labeling around it. And Gruber eventually discovered that what Darwin was doing was taking all of his theorizing and synthesizing it into this visual form so that he could make sense of it himself. He couldn't deal with the complexity of his own thought processes until he did that. The concept of image of wide scope came to the fore in Gruber's thinking, and others have since taken that idea and turned it into an instructional strategy. Again, it's very little known. Very few people around the world are using this strategy, although it does have tremendous potential.
One of those few people who are using the strategy in their teaching is Dr. Sigfredo Hernandez, who teaches marketing at Rider University. He was delighted at the outcomes when Don Ambrose helped him to introduce visual metaphor to his classes. Sigfredo talks about how his students answered the question, "What is marketing all about?" using visual metaphor.
Marketing is like a NASCAR car race. Marketing is like a game of golf. Marketing is like walking on a tightrope. Marketing is like fishing. Those are examples of visual metaphors that my students develop. The reason why I use a visual metaphor project in my marketing principles class is because I strongly believe that to know marketing means that you're able to identify the core concepts of marketing, the parts of marketing, and that you're able to explain how the core parts relate to each other to form a whole. In other words, to know marketing means to develop your own synthesis of marketing. And this is precisely what I want my students to do. And they do so through the Visual Metaphor Project.
Considering the success he's had in his classes, one might wonder why it's not much more popular as a teaching strategy. Why isn't everyone using visual metaphor? Sigfredo explains.
It's a very challenging project. It's very difficult. It's a very difficult task. And the reason is that our students are not accustomed to think in terms of goals. They're accustomed to think in terms of isolated concepts, little pieces and chunks of information. And I require them to think at a higher level of critical thinking. I require them to develop a synthesis of what marketing is all about. The task becomes even more complicated because then they had to translate their verbal synthesis into a visual metaphor, which requires a complete different type of thinking.
Whoa, okay. So considering all the difficulty in trying to do this, why would anyone do it? It's because of the unique benefits to the students. Dr. Hernandez explains.
First, they develop a better understanding of marketing. They critically think at a higher level because they have to develop a synthesis, and then they have to mode switch that verbal thinking into the visual metaphor. Students are challenged to think creatively as well, so they have to develop their creative skills. And finally, students appear to better retain the knowledge acquired in the course.
Thanks go to Don Ambrose and Sigfredo Hernandez at Rider University for making this great teaching strategy available to students and teachers. This is John Lemesdy.
Well, after three podcasts, John, it's a pleasure to say, excellent job with that report.
Thank you very, very much, Brian.
So now that we know what visual metaphor is, John, what part did technology play in the presentation on visual metaphor at Rider?
Well, the faculty development session was really broken into two parts. The first part of which was Don explaining visual metaphor on paper. Literally, he got out big pieces of paper, gave examples of visual metaphor. They explained topics such as higher education, for example. And one of the ways that we exemplified a visual metaphor was to do a visual metaphor on an image wide scope on higher education, secondary education, where we came up with the scheme of a ship, a Viking ship. And in this visual metaphor, the ship was sort of that central idea. And then we had things like icebergs being too much partying for students, and things like the shore that you're leaving being, you know, your uneducated self, and the shore that you're going towards being your educated self. And we sort of
indicated, or the new world.
Or the new world. But all the ideas in the visual, in this visual scheme on this huge sheet of paper, all had to do with this metaphor for learning and the process that we go through, and the pros and the cons, and the idea of the guy up in the crow's nest, you know, sort of looking out for dangers. Being the president or the registrar, you know, or the administrative staff, and things like anchors when a student gets together with a advisor and they say, okay, you have to stop the path you're going on and we have to sort of change paths. So it became this great visual metaphor that we were able to really scope out. And, that was how we handled the idea of showing how visual metaphor can be applied to a topic. Now, the topic is typically something like a magazine article or an essay or a plot for a story. And then that plot is analyzed and then a visual metaphor is applied to that. But it's essentially the same idea. We just happen to use higher education because everybody in the room knew about higher education, as opposed to some academic, specific academic topic and some expertise such as computer science. So once we went through that, I got up and I showed people how to use the GNU image manipulation program. Most of these people had never been in Photoshop. They had never been in EarthenView or any other visual editing application. And so I wanted to make it as simple as possible for them to get into this application and to use the tools and become familiar with the tools without having to worry too much about the visual metaphor aspect. So what I did was I went out and got some images from a Creative Commons site that happened to be coloring book pages that were open source. They were Creative Commons images, as I said. And they were images of animals, you know, a monkey, a tiger, a crocodile, etc. And my idea was to use these images of these animals, cut them up, and to make sort of conglomerate animals to represent an idea, such as, you know, American foreign policy, or even to make a self-portrait And that's what I actually decided to do. I took a couple images of birds from this Creative Commons site and asked everybody to put them together in such a way as to describe themselves in a self-portrait. That's a visual metaphor, too. So we went over things like, you know, what the marquee tool does. And in the GNU image manipulation program, the marquee tool, which is what it's known as in Photoshop, is the selection tool or the rectangle tool or the circle tool. And I showed them how to use the stamping tools, and I showed them how to use layers, which is a really foreign concept, again, for somebody who's never been inside that application. But once you're aware of these concepts, you can use them to your advantage. And the difference between the session where we were doing these things on paper and drawing literally with pencils on paper, and the session where we did this in the GNU image manipulation program was a completely different set of tools. You know, it meant that when we laid down a mark on the page, that it wasn't a permanent mark anymore. I mean, you could erase the line on the Viking ship drawing too, but it's a lot different when you can save a version of the image and then work into it differently, you know, in the GIMP. So it was a very interesting, very detailed, very at times difficult and engaging session. One of the things that was notable about the two sessions was in the session where we were asked to draw on paper, people were very inhibited in what they were doing on the page because it was their hand touching the page. And it's whenever you're asked to sort of perform in that way, it's different than when you're using a tool sort of remotely on a screen. People were not nearly as scared to take an eraser out of a toolkit, you know, in a palette on screen and erase a line, as opposed to using that eraser to erase in reality, in physicality. So, I mean, there's, like anything else involving academia and technology or creativity and technology, there are different dynamics that happen in physicality than happen in that virtual space of the GNU image manipulation program or other applications.
Well, Don, I hope you keep us informed about the work you're doing on visual metaphor at Rider.
You know that I will.
Thank you very much. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate that. But it looks like we're just about at the end of another show. Anything you would like to share with the audience?
Well, again, I want to remind our listeners who know about a show or event related to technology and the arts to let us know about it by emailing us at technology.arts@gmail.com. We will be adding an events page on our website with a rundown of events to be read during each podcast. And keep in mind that even though we are physically located in New Jersey, our audience and reach are global. So if you happen to see an event related to technology and the arts anywhere on the planet, please feel free to drop us a line and we'll check it out to see if it fits on our calendar. Chances are it will. And as always, if you have a story idea related to technology and the arts that you'd like to share with us, or if you just want to say hi, contact us at technology.arts@gmail.com. And you're always welcome to leave a comment on the Technology and the Arts blog at techarts.wordpress.com.
Well, that closes the curtain on another Technology and the Arts podcast. If all goes well, we're going to have a very special guest for our next show on February 21st. We have made plans to talk to Tim Westergren, founder of the Music Genome Project and the Pandora Music Service, while he is in Princeton for a Pandora road trip stop on February 8th. He's going to be on a tight schedule, but we have been told he will do his best to give us a few minutes after his talk. Again, we should have Music Genome Project and Pandora founder Tim Westergren as our special guest for our next podcast, February 21st, 2007. So until then, for Technology and the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemaznick. Take care.
For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.